This is the Faherty Podcast presented by Farmers Insurance.
You're all very kind. When this show was nominated for an Emmy, my producers thought it was a sign that we've finally gotten things right. Finally, my show wasn't broken, so I decided to fix it. I thought, you know, about lying on my sofa watching Real Housewives of Muirfield Village. I thought about it on my psychiatrist's sofa, telling him about my dreams of McCord and his sheep. I even thought about it at Neiman Marcus, passed out on a sofa while my wife was shopping. And then it hit me. I love sofas. That's when I decided we needed a sofa, and it reminded me of staying at Barbara and Jack's house, uninvited, of course, where I wound up sitting next to the Golden Bear, who was in his boxers cheering on the Ohio State Buckeyes. So, it only made sense for my first show with my new sofa, I should have Golf's Great One sitting beside me again. Although this time, my producers insisted that he wore pants. So, I took my new sofa to Barbara and Jack's house in Jupiter. Notice how I always mention Barbara first. That's because Jack does too.
Huge thanks to Jack for opening the doors to your house.
And I got there as he was hosting the Four Love Tournament, a wonderful event that raises money for children and features some of the biggest names in tennis and golf. You see, Jack has three world-class tennis courts in his yard. So when I pulled up in my old pickup, I ran into legends like Serena Williams, Andy Murray, and the Bryan brothers. And the next day, there was golf at the Bears Club with the likes of Dustin Johnson, Justin Thomas, and Ricky Fowler.
That's a full 3-wood for me.
It turns out that it's really good to know Jack, and it's lucky that I do too, because I convinced him to bring along a couple of his friends. Well, gentlemen, thank you all very much for being the spuds on my sofa, if you like. And Jack, thank you and Barbara for having us here at the Bears Club.
Thank you, David. Nice to have you here.
You know, golf's a game of numbers, and it's not that tennis isn't. Well, we'll get to that. But the magic number for you, Jack, was 18, same as the amount of holes on a golf course. And that first major championship came in 1962. What do you remember about it? What sticks out?
I finished second and fourth of two previous U.S. Opens at Cherry Hills and Oakland Hills. And I felt going into that the U.S. Opens was sort of going to be my tournament. I didn't remember that it was in Arnold Palmer's backyard, or I didn't know it was in Arnold Palmer's backyard. And it turned out that at the end of 72 holes, Arnold and I were tied at 283. We went into a playoff, and I prevailed.
What was the atmosphere like, though, you know, going up against Arnold Palmer back in those days?
Well, I tried to wear a black hat and a black shirt, but I didn't have any of them, so I wore white. Arnold was obviously the king and obviously very popular, and I had four or five people there that were rooting for me. The rest of them wanted for Arnold.
Well, Bob, you know, you and Mike have 16 Grand Slam victories. What is it about the big tournaments, you know, that puts the tilt in your kilts?
Well, yeah, those are the ones that you kind of remember by. You know, you can win the other tournaments, the Masters, or finish number one, but everyone kind of always stacks you up in the history books against your rivals by majors. We've lost a bunch of finals as well, 14, which is brutal. But yeah. Just being in that moment and having a chance to hold up another trophy is why we're out there.
Is it more special at you know, a U.S. Open or at Wimbledon? Or?
I mean, I could compare it to golf. I would say Wimbledon's like the Masters. So much history. Everyone's polite. It's very quiet. It's the one you get goosebumps. When you're walking out on center court, it's like you're walking into like a haunted house. There's so many dead bodies in that grass. Each one is special in its own way.
Ricky, you've established yourself in recent years as one of the very top players in the world. You've yet to get into that sort of major frame of mind. How important is it to you to win that first one?
Being here on this couch with 18 and 16 and to be determined. Maybe this will help out.
None over here, incidentally?
I was just talking about the middle.
Right, okay. Yeah.
This is your show.
I concentrated on the minors, yes.
So I feel like it takes time. It's tough to come and win them early. It wasn't so hard for Jack to come out and win it early. I think 62 was a pretty quick start to the major category.
My first year on tour, yeah.
How old were you, Jack?
22.
So I'm a little behind on Jack's side of things, yeah. But, you know, I look at it as late 20s, early 30s is definitely going into the prime on the golfer's side. And coming off of last year being one of my best years statistically, this is a time where we move forward and start getting some majors.
Well, how do you prepare for a major, you know, differently to a regular event?
For me, I try and keep it as similar as possible. I don't want to treat it as you know, a special event or try and do anything differently. I want to try and go into it and play it just like I would a normal tour event. Not saying that I wouldn't go potentially see the golf course beforehand, but as far as the week of the tournament, I want to make sure that I'm not wearing myself out. I want to be just as rested and ready to go come Thursday.
I'm not sure that taking every tournament the same, Ricky, is exactly the way to win a major. I mean, I took majors totally different than I did any other tournament. The week of the tournament, I agree with you totally. Try to take it that way. But the preparation and so forth, and my biggest problem with a major is getting too pumped up. And I got myself too pumped up on several occasions, and then I couldn't play. So I had to find out the level, but I had to get myself ready to play in that tournament. And then I had to make sure I either toned it down, toned it up, whatever I had to do. But to me, we had four times a year that you had to be ready.
Yeah.
And the week of the tournament, I think you can handle it that way. Handling, you're like, and you're trying not to do anything too special, because then that takes you out of your rhythm of what you're used to doing. But before it, you've got to get in your own mind that this is a major. I got to win it. I got to put myself in position. It's my turn. I got to get it done.
Bob, what do you do? I mean, I know you play at Queens before
yeah.
Wimbledon,
yeah.
you know, maybe to get used to the grass, but right. is there anything else you can do?
When you set out, you look at the calendar and you build your schedule around the four majors. You don't want to overplay going in, but you want to have matches under your belt. So you just see those four times of the year, and then all the other tournaments go in to get you ready to peak, because that's where you want to play your best tennis. You don't want to play it the week before and hold the smaller trophy. You want to give yourself a shot. That's how you can sleep at night when you retire.
What are you going to do if you do play well the week before? Does that feel like, oh, wow, this is too early?
Well, yeah. I mean, at Wimbledon this year, we went to Eastbourne
yeah.
and played great and held up this little trophy. And then Wimbledon, we went in and we were like, oh, feeling good, but we didn't have anything left. So we lost second round, which is brutal.
I know guys who actually used to deliberately not play well on a Wednesday in the Pro-Am.
Yeah.
You know, if you go out there and you're, really? Are you one of those
absolutely.
Guys?
Absolutely. 75 was perfect at a Pro-Am.
I agree.
That's so comforting to your amateur partners.
I didn't ever told them, but
yeah. Well, you chime in a couple key birdies.
Yeah.
That's fine.
That's enough.
Hit a couple good chips. Great. Couple good drives the rest of the day.
Yeah,
we're good to go for tomorrow.
The last thing you want to do is shoot 63 or 4 on a Wednesday?
I shot 62 one year.
Did you?
At Baldestrol.
Oh.
67 going into the tournament. The day before, I shot 62. And I'm sitting there, I said, why? Why do you do that? But in that case, for some reason, it carried through.
Right.
But most of the time, you do something like that, and you're sitting there, and you say, you just shot yourself in the head, and the day's over, the week's over.
That's like the par 3 at the Masters, right?
Well, you don't want to win that. Nobody wants to win that.
The curse.
I've seen that on TV. The guys have putts to win it, and they just turn around and putt it off the green into the water.
Mm-hmm. Bob, you know, for a long time, tennis was really about singles, and you guys have made it kind of cool again, you know, the doubles. It's really, you know, fun to watch. You guys, the interaction on the court, the chest bumps. When you see kids doing that, is it cool?
Yeah, it's cool. I mean, yeah, we see other teams doing it now.
Yeah.
It's just become a part of the culture, the chest bump.
Have you ever had a bad chest bump where you've hurt yourselves?
One time we went up for the chest bump. Mike wasn't on the same page. He hugged me. So I came down on his ankle and I twisted my ankle. It wasn't good. One time
that's an embarrassing
he said I
injury.
Broke his sternum, but whatever. the veterans hated us, thought we were cocky punks. Now they respect us more. Now we can break it out once or twice a match.
For us as golfers, it was really cool to see tennis played at that level. We had Jack Sock, Jim Courier, and Serena, Andy Murray. Who's responsible for getting that field? You guys?
I called them, but I used Jack's name, and that's what brought them all in. I called them to have an opportunity to play on those grass courts at Jack's house. You know, I saw this morning everyone's posting a picture with the Golden Bear. That was a huge magnet for those guys.
How do you balance friendship and competition? You guys will hang around for each other, whether it's Justin Thomas is winning, you'll be there at the end.
Yeah, it's fun to see your buddies play well. But the worst part is when you lose to your buddies.
Yeah.
So I use it as motivation. I mean, people may see it, talk bad about it, but like being too close or these guys are spending too much time with each other, rooting for each other, anything like that.
Going on spring break together?
Yeah, the last people I want to lose to are my close friends because yes. That's all I'm going to hear about. So it's great to see your buddies play well. You know, at the end of the tournament, I did everything I could do that week. Let's go celebrate your win. And I think social media has definitely played a big part in it.
Huge.
So, yeah. I mean, you're getting to see a little bit more. I mean, I know these guys would hang out tournaments away from the golf course, at the golf course, and the team events and stuff like that. The public and the fans are just getting to see a little bit more of what really goes on nowadays.
One of my favorite stories, when I captained the President's Cup and we went to Washington, and that was a year after Tiger and Phil had played at Oakland Hills, and it was a disaster.
Right.
And so we're riding out in the bus, and they're sitting beside each other, talking the whole way out. They get to the cottage that we had out there at RTJ, and Phil says, "Tiger, how about a game of ping pong?" "Sure." I went and played a game of ping pong. Tiger won. Phil says, "Play another one." I said, "Okay." Played another one, and Tiger won. Phil says, "I'll get this buffet behind me here. Let's switch ins." So they switched ins, and Phil won the next game. And Phil says, "Come on, let's play." Tiger goes, "Phil, 2-1. And that ended it. I mean, you know, and I said to him, I says, "You guys get along fine." "Yeah, we're good friends. We don't have any issues."
"Yeah, of course."
He says, "Oh, but we're competitive. When we want to keep it that way, we want to keep it fun." I said, "When I get him 2-1, I want to keep it 2-1.
Was it as cutthroat, you know, back in your days?
No. I mean, I wanted to beat Arnold. I wanted to beat Gary. I wanted to beat Trevino. They all wanted to beat me. But when we got done, you know, I think they're much the same way the guys are today. Yeah. We get done, we shake hands off the green. It says, "Hey, you know," I'd say to Arnold, "I said, you and Winnie want to go to dinner tonight?" "Sure, that's where we're going to go." I mean, we did that a lot. I think it's no different today. I mean, golf is a game that's a game that we play hard on the golf course. And when the round's over, the round's over. We don't want to take it home with us. We all had a great relationship, and I think the guys do today. Do you want to lose your friends? Of course you don't want to lose your friends.
No.
You want to beat your friends? I want to beat my friends, too. You sometimes lose to somebody that you really never thought about, but when you got your close friends, that's who you want to win.
Yeah. These days, Ricky receives sage golf advice from the likes of the Golden Bear. But when he was little, golf was all about him and his grandfather, Yutaka.
My grandpa was the one who introduced me to golf, and he was picking up the game roughly when I was 2-3 years old, and through pre-K, kindergarten, into early grade school, he'd pick me up on Wednesdays, and it was either he was going to take me golfing or fishing. We just kept rotating it, and so still golf and fish, so I think it's carried on okay.
Yeah, and you have his name tattooed on, is it your right bicep?
Yeah, it's yeah. Right here.
You've another tattoo. Show us the other one. It's on your right forearm.
Yeah, let's see if this will...
How important was it for you to play in the Olympics?
It was something you've dreamed of doing, but you never thought was possible, just because golf wasn't a part of the Olympics. Yep. To be a part of something so much bigger than what just golf is. So to be there, and I think we probably had about 400 of the U.S. athletes walking in opening ceremonies. And like I said, I was the only golfer there, so I was a tiny little piece. To be at the one that was our first time back for golf, being there, just a great experience. I didn't play great.
You enjoyed the experience. You saw a bunch of the other events too, didn't you?
Well, I had good access.
Yes.
You know, I could get into other events and, you know, be a true Olympic athlete.
Yeah. Bob, how many did you play in?
3.
So far?
Athens, Beijing, and London. And then my wife was scared that I was going to get Zika, so we didn't go to Rio. Look, it's the energy down there at an Olympics is unlike any other. You don't understand it unless you're actually there. And yeah, I was goo goo gaga. The opening ceremonies had the camcorder and tears. It's a wild up experience. And we didn't play well our first Olympics either. We were number one seed, and we lost to a couple of Chilean guys who it was a big upset at the time. But the second one, we learned a lot going in. We were just some more calm and able to play the way we wanted to play, got bronze, and then the next one even better.
Jack, you know, you played on how many Ryder Cup sides?
I'm not sure.
But that means it's a lot.
Six, maybe, probably.
That's a lot. And Walker Cup sides, and what did it mean to you to play with the red, white, and blue?
Well, the first time I did it was the Walker Cup matches. I was 19 years old at Muirfield. And, you know, pretty amazing when they play the Star Spangled Banner and, and you just have the tears running down your face. And, you know, I mean, David, I mean, they play the Star Spangled Banner at every event that I go to, no matter what sport I'm going through. And I still get tears running down my face every time. It just absolutely just hits me that way. And I didn't have the opportunity to play in the Olympics. I would have loved, loved to have done that.
More Faherty will continue after a few words from our sponsor.
Not to brag, but I've seen a few things in my day. I've been run over three times. I permanently misplaced one of the most sacred trophies in golf. And one time I dove headfirst into a water fountain only 18 inches deep. I've learned valuable lessons from each of these experiences, just like Farmers Insurance has learned from all the outrageous yet true situations they've encountered. So just imagine what their experience could do for you.
We are Farmers. Bum, ba, bum, 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 bum.
All right then, now back to the show.
You know, we're talking about technology. Players are getting bigger and stronger. Equipment is lighter and faster.
I'm not getting any bigger.
Sorry?
I said I'm not getting any bigger.
You're going to hit a spurt
No,
here.
But the other
thing
is...
You hit it a long way.
Yeah, you're sitting at an unbelievable distance. But the average amateur still finds the game extremely difficult.
The three problems we've got in the game of golf, it costs too much, it's too difficult, and it takes too long. And the longer you make golf courses, the longer it's going to take. Now, I don't think length is all the answer. The more you lengthen the golf course, the more people that you eliminate from the chances to win. It becomes more and more just power. I mean, I was a long hitter, but I hated long golf courses. I loved golf courses where you had to place it here, play a little shot here, position here, had to think here. And that to me was fun. Ricky, I don't know whether you feel that way or not. I don't know what the guys feel about it today or not.
I don't think that golf courses necessarily need to be made super long or anything, even with guys hitting it longer. You look at some of the golf courses that we play, you know, TPC, it's more of a place you have to drive it and place it here to have the shot into the green, and the greens get firm and fast, and you have to be in the fairway to control the golf ball. At that point, it doesn't matter what golf ball you're hitting. If you're coming out of the rough, good luck.
Not many golf courses have the ability to be able to do that. When I go design today, what I try to do is I try to take the driver out of the hands of the long hitter three or four times during the round. I think that balances it out with guys that don't hit it quite that far. You know, the game changes, things change. I understand that. I'm not worried so much about the change of what happens in the game. I'm worried about what happens to the average golfer and what they have to pay for. We want to bring people in the game and keep them in the game. You want to bring people into tennis and keep them in the game. Where does it benefit the most people and it's best for whatever sport it might be? That's sort of where I look at it.
Talking about, you know, major events, not quite a major, but in 2015, you had an amazing closing stretch at the Players. What do you recall about that?
Well, I was in a way pretty far out of it. I'd actually made a great par on number 12. And I go to, you know, the closing stretch at TPC.
Yeah, I mean, 17, in an hour, you birdied it three times.
I birdied 13, I made a good par, because I had a flyer lie in the rough on 14. And then I birdied 15, eagled 16, birdied 17, birdied 18.
Wow.
I thought it would probably be enough to win outright, but that was to get into the playoff. And we had Sergio and Kiz. And Kiz and I ended up being tied after the three-hole aggregate, so we went back to 17 and decided to make birdie again.
Pretty good.
Golfers have great memories.
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
Well, when you play that stretch of holes like that, you remember it. Well,
yeah, Jack, you remember that. Those are pretty tough holes.
Jack has a selective memory.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you can ask Jack, you know, about the duel in the sun, 1977. You know, it's Tom Watson that won. He doesn't remember a damn thing about it.
Not a thing.
No.
Yeah. Yeah. Erased.
But he remembers every single detail of all 18 of your wins. But what were the pivotal wins, you think, in your career, Jack?
1959 U.S. Amateur was probably the most pivotal to me. I had an 8-foot putt at the last hole to beat Charlie Coe with a 36-hole match. And I knocked it in. And to me, that meant that I could do it when I had to do it. I believed that I could do it when I had to do it. when you put that in your head, then that's the thing that doesn't leave.
How about you, Bob?
I mean, the gold medal is the one that everyone wants to hold when they come in the house, but it's all relative. I mean, in the 14s, we won our first national title, which was a little, you get a little gold ball. And it doesn't matter if you win the 80s or the 12s, you get a gold ball for a national title. My mom has a few of them. My dad has zero. And for us to come home with that gold ball was everything at the time.
Jack, did you ever have a close like Ricky's where you came from a long way behind, you know, like he did in the players?
Probably the best close was probably at Inverary sometime in the 80s. I birdied the last five holes to win.
By how many?
One.
Well, just by one?
Yeah.
Yeah. Who was the victim?
Drew Jones. Poor guy. He was really playing well, and he was had the whole tournament won. I just kept birdie. When I got done, poor Greer never really played well after that again. I felt bad for him.
I'm sure you got over it. Yeah. I remember reading when you saw the film of the 1962 U.S. Open that you won, you saw yourself smoking and decided to quit. What was it about that?
Well, you know, back then, when I did play the U.S. Open, we finished in June. The first film that I got was in December 8th of that. I think things are a little different now with technology. But I had a putt on the, I was playing Palmer in a playoff on the 13th hole, par 3, at Oakmont. I hit a putt, I reached down, picked a cigarette up, went up and tapped the ball in the hole, and I had it hanging out of my mouth. I said, Barbara, that's the worst example for youth that I've ever seen. And I never smoked another cigarette on the golf course in my life. And, you know, I smoked a little bit socially after that, but I haven't smoked a cigarette now in, I don't know, close to 40 years.
You in particular, you've got a tremendous fan base with little kids too. I mean, do you feel a responsibility?
Yeah, definitely. And it's been something that, I mean, definitely was not planned, coming out to play professional golf and turn pro and try and make my way on the PGA Tour. And that was my number one goal. By no means was it trying to come out and get kids to dress up like me and follow me. That just came with it, and it's a bonus to be able to be in the position that you have kids, you know, looking up to you. And for me, not being far removed from growing up, looking up to other guys and having role models of my own, and to be in a position that I get to, you know, hopefully have a positive influence on the younger generation.
He's a great role model.
He is.
He's a great role model.
I mean, it's fun.
Well, he knows Gary's boy, GT. Mm-hmm. I mean, when he was about 10 years old, you know, the first thing he could do is he comes out with his whole total orange outfit, you know. And how many kids did that?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, all did that. I mean, Ricky's been a great role model. He's handled himself well. He handles his life well. He handles his people well. He handles the gallery well. Plays great golf. What more can you ask for a role model?
Thank you.
You know, Arnold came in for some criticism about playing, you know, for too long. And it always occurred to me that there was someone that played with Arnold on that particular day that could say that they got to play with Arnold Palmer that one time. And that was a very special thing. I only got to play with him three times in my career, and I remember every single thing about it. You know, Ricky got to play with you today. Is that a special thing for you?
For me, it's
pretty bad by the way I played, but I'm sorry.
But it doesn't matter, Jack. It doesn't matter.
No, and I'm looking forward to getting some more rounds and time with Jack, and especially being around here at the Bears Club. And Jack, obviously, whether he admits it or not, he has his presence.
Yes.
He's one of the greatest, if not the greatest, that's played this game. To have 18 majors, it doesn't matter what era you play in, it's 18 majors.
Yeah.
Anytime he walks up on the range or we're out on the golf course, I want to hit a good golf shot. I want to try and impress Jack. And it takes a lot to do it. If you get that reaction, you know, whether it's out of Jack or I got to play with Arnie at Seminole and the pro member, we're in the same group there. And you get to play with guys that I looked up to and guys that ultimately changed the game and helped us to be able to do what we're due to do today. It's fun to try and impress the guys that once were, you know, at the top.
Okay, this is true or false. I'm going to ask you questions about your couch mates here, and it's up to you to guess the answers, all right? Ricky played on a President's Cup team captained by Freddie Couples. True or false, did Ricky dress up as Freddie Couples for Halloween when he was 7 years old?
Must be true.
Correct, but that was a lucky guess.
It was a lucky guess.
Yes.
I had a 50-50 chance.
Yeah. Jack appeared in the movie Cannonball Run alongside Jackie Chan, during which they were called Jack 1 and Jack 2.
True.
That is so pitiful a guess. It really is.
I could have told you no.
All right, whilst growing up, the Bryan brothers were not allowed to compete against each other in junior tournaments. And if the draw brought them together, they took turns in forfeiting.
I'd say false.
I believe that's true.
True.
Really?
Is it true?
Didn't play until we were 16.
Against each other?
Yeah, we would just flip the coin and share the trophies.
Once
the crowd started coming in to watch the matches, that's when we played.
I would think two guys are competitive. They want to go after it.
Yeah.
But maybe that's why you didn't play in doubles.
No, I mean, I think it's the reason, it's the reason probably why we're tight still. Yeah. Friends, we never saw each other as competitors.
When he won the 1962 U.S. Open, Jack was still working part-time selling insurance.
False. You never sold insurance.
Yeah, I did.
What? You did? Yeah.
I was the youngest person ever licensed in the state of Ohio to sell insurance.
Come on.
Sell life insurance. And I just loved selling to my fraternity brothers. They really needed it.
Yeah. During Hurricane Irma, Justin Thomas kept the Wanamaker trophy and other valuables at Ricky's house.
True?
Yeah.
Where's your house? Wasn't it in the path?
I live right down the street from JT.
So I would think he'd
yours was made of brick and his was made of straw.
My house is made pretty strong, but he doesn't have a safe at the house, and we have two. So I had the Wanamaker and Players Trophy, and we had quite a few watches, some Rolex watches.
I assumed you changed the combinations after they put them in there.
Well, he doesn't know the combination.
That's right.
I could have kept the Wanamaker as long as I wanted.
As long as you wanted.
Your first major?
So. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, Jack, you recently opened your 300th golf course.
Over 301 now.
301. You've got apparel, golf balls, ice cream.
Oh, it's good, too.
Wine, lemonade, restaurants. You know, what does it mean for you to associate yourself with a product? I mean, it has to be.
You know, we've always been about quality and integrity. And something that actually, I mean, like the ice cream. We have actually 14 flavors of ice cream. And I want to tell you, ice cream cost me 20 pounds. Seriously. Yeah. We got into it. I got myself in a really good weight. And we started in the ice cream business. And I had to make sure that every ice cream was what I wanted, the flavor I wanted. We had to make the adjustments in it and so forth and so on. Barbara would see a picture of me with 20 different flavors beside me. And I got this spoon and she'd say, caption is Jack hard at work.
That's the single worst excuse for putting on 20 pounds I've ever heard.
Absolutely did. And I think that if you're involved in something, if you got a product, it better be done right. And then people say, what does Jack Nicklaus mean to them? It means that it means credibility. If it's not something that we should be doing, then you know, we don't want to be involved with it.
Bob, you know, when you hear this and when you get to be involved in this kind of a charity, how does it make you feel?
It's really the best thing you can do. It's the best feeling. I'm beaming after this event to see the smiles on the donors' faces, but just knowing what that money is going to do for the kids. Love getting to know Jack and Barbara. And they're mentoring us to take our foundation to the next level. So this event, it couldn't have gone better, and I can't wait for year two.
Charity is obviously a big part of, I know on the tennis side, but very much the golf side and what we do throughout the year. And fun to be able to help out, kind of continue the giving of this big family. Looking forward to hopefully having my first foundation event next year and start mine and continue the giving of ongoing from there.
Count me in. Absolutely. Okay. And thank you, all three of you, so much for being the first guests on my new sofa. It's a little awkward because I can't shake hands with all of you, but thank you, my host, for sure.
David, thank you. And
let me
thank Bob and Ricky for everything that they've done as far as Ricky is. I told you, Ricky's always there. He's always been there. This is the first one we've done with Bob and Mike, and we're going to do a lot more.
Well, count me in for next year. And thank you, Barbara. I wanted to find out what it takes to be a winner, and my three guests tonight have shown me exactly that. Jack talked about how his preparation led him to 18 majors. Bob shared the inside gain from winning 16 Grand Slams with his twin brother. And Ricky relived the amazing finish that earned him the Players' Championship. But that's just winning at golf and tennis tournaments. What I really gained insight to was something deeper, like how last year when Ricky won the Honda, his buddy Justin Thomas was waiting there to congratulate him, and how this year when Justin won, Ricky was there to return the favor. I learned how much it means to all three of them to help and inspire kids, and how much Jack and Barbara have shown the other two how to make the most of their opportunity to make the world a better place. I don't know about you, but to me, that's what winning is all about. Well, that's it for tonight. If you can't get enough of me, you can find me at FeherTwit on Facebook and InstaChat or whatever the hell you call it.
Thanks for joining me, Feherty fans. You can find more of the Feherty podcast presented by Farmers Insurance on Feherty.com and your favorite podcast provider. Go to Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Art19, or Google Play. Search Feherty and subscribe. If you love the show, and why wouldn't you? Be sure to leave a rating, review, and tell your friends.